Now, in a slight change to the schedule, I am going to talk to our very own Near FM's newest addition to the team, political analyst John Morgan. John, good afternoon and welcome to the programme, for a start.
Good afternoon, Donny. How are you?
I am well. Now, John is going to talk to us today in relation to the forthcoming European elections. And I suppose it's very timely, considering that we had our European candidates, or some of them, for the Dublin constituency in last night, and we did ourselves proud with that actual broadcast last night from the Civic Centre here in Coolock. John, maybe first, if we look at the constituencies, because I'm thinking particularly of one of them, your own native one, actually. What is it?
Midlands North West.
It's an absolutely ludicrous constituency. It starts out at Ashbourne and finishes above the top of Lochswilly nearly.
Yeah, indeed, Donny. It's an enormous constituency. It covers 13 counties. As you say, you go from the commuter belt of Louth, Meath, Kildare, and you go all the way across to the west, and you go all the way up to the top of Donegal. So no doubt there's clearly very big differences between the things that will concern people right over on the east side, going right over to the west and going up north. But just to give listeners a kind of a bit of background, in 2014, of course, the four seats were taken by independent Luke Ming Flanagan. He topped the poll and was elected. Mairead McGuinness, Fine Gael, came second in terms of first preference votes, 14.2%. They were then followed by Matt Carthy of Sinn Féin, and the final seat was won by independent Marian Harkin. Now, that's relevant for next Friday, because, of course, Marian is the MEP who's not going forward again. The other three are. So where does her vote go? But as I said, hugely diverse constituency, Donny. If you look at that commuter belt, as I said, very much concerns would be around things like housing, transport links, jobs, naturally. If you go into the more rural part of the community, it will, of course, be about rural regeneration, support for small towns and jobs. It'll be about connectivity, it'll be about infrastructure, it'll be about the rural broadband scheme. But, you know, for example, in some rural areas, you're going to have problems with even with mobile phone coverage. So that's an impact on people's lives. Farming is a huge thing, of course, in that rural part of the constituency. The economy is very much about agri-food and agriculture. Farmers feeling under pressure. They'll certainly be farmers feeling concerns about the deal whereby Canadian beef, for example, will come into the EU. But, of course, that's been balanced out by one particular announcement, which people will be wondering about the timing of it, but certainly...
And you're referring, of course, to Phil Hogan's announcement yesterday of, what is it, 100 million?
Well, 50 million from the EU.
And 50 from the...
And it's supposed to be matched only by 50 million from the government. Whether or when that happens, that's another thing. They're supposed to match that. Again, farmers will feel... of course, the environment is a huge... Climate change is a huge issue for everybody. They certainly feel that there is a disproportionate kind of pressure on them in terms of emissions, in terms of livestock and so on. So they're the things that will concern people. Up in Donegal, of course, fisheries will be a big issue. And that feeds into the whole Brexit piece, because when we get into the continuing relationship section of the negotiations, the fisheries issue will be huge. And people in Donegal rightly concerned about that. What the constituency has in terms of common concerns, of course, again, connectivity, as I mentioned, broadband, Brexit, and for the business community, they'll be concerned about the US-China trade war, what impact that's going to have on the world economy and our own economy. So there's a lot there, you know.
Call it for me, John.
Well,
how do you see it going?
Let's look at the main candidates, I guess. Mairead McGuinness, certainly. Donny would have a high profile. Name recognition is very big. And I think that's probably the single point to make about the European elections. In local elections, in Dáil elections, people know the candidates. They know what they like, what they don't like, what they want to vote for, what they don't want to vote for. They're less... probably less sure about that when it comes to European elections. So being well known and name recognition is a big thing. Mairead McGuinness, of course, Vice President of the in Europe, 15 years in Brussels. She's the face of Brexit for a lot of people in Ireland. a big connection to the farming constituency, former presenter of Ear to the Ground on RTE. Luke Ming Flanagan, then, of course, a lot of name recognition there and high profile. I actually found it interesting, Donny, travelling up around the border recently, the postering. So standard poster is name, photograph and a slogan or a byline of some sort. Luke Ming Flanagan has decided to dispense with his face on the posters. Some people might have a joke about that, somebody less charitable than me, but certainly he knows literally it is about name recognition, and I actually think it works quite well. So he's going with the name, and I think that again, he's got strong farming connections in terms of Pete Boggs and the work that he did in that area. Matt Carthy, again, high profile, a huge poster campaign, probably more than anybody up there around the border, backed, you know, would be significant funds to do that for him. Strong vote along the border, but certainly from what I hear, a lot of the candidates are pushing voters, saying, well, if you vote for Matt Carthy, he may end up standing for election as a replacement for Caoimhín Ó Chaoileáin in the next election in Cavan Monaghan. So you vote for him, you may not get him. I understand his proxy is Darren O'Rourke, a Sinn Féin councillor in Meath. So then you've got the unexpected, who knows, Peter Casey, of course, did very well in the presidential elections. He seems to have followed a similar track in terms of his campaign, although he doesn't seem to be as high profile in the last week, for example, as he was. And then you have the second Fine Gael candidate, Maria Walsh, former Rosa Tralee, certainly got into the news with her taking on party headquarters. She and Mairead McGuinness appeared not to be happy with the split. She did make the point that she said, yeah, I may have a Rosa Tralee sash in one hand, but I also have a Defence Forces shooting award from her time in the Army Reserve, I understand. You know, saying that she's not going to back down, she's well able to fight her own corner. It's not quite a ballot box in one hand and arm light in the other, but it certainly got her a lot of profile. And then you have Fianna Fáil. It's the unknown, Brendan Smith and Cavan, Anne Rabbit, Galway East. It would be amazing, I think, don't need to think, that they wouldn't get a seat. They didn't the last time. They lost out to Marion Harkin by a couple of hundred votes. They've decided to go with a strategy whereby the border goes to Brendan Smith, the western seaboard below Donegal goes to Anne Rabbit, and the rest is shared territory. I think they're concerned about a recent poll whereby they came in 6th and 7th, didn't have a quota between them. They've decided to change their strategy now. They're saying that the whole constituency is open to both. There's only a week to go. That's a lot of ground to cover. A week ago, as I said, it would have been hard to believe they wouldn't get a seat. But I think what we're looking at now, Donny, is Mairead McGuinness, Luke Ming Flanagan, Matt Carthy likely to be elected. And that last seat comes down to between Maria Walsh, Fianna Fáil, probably Brendan Smith, and Peter Casey. There's momentum with Maria Walsh. It's really hard to call. I expect in the last week Fianna Fáil will get the base out in a big way. So that's a really interesting one. Hard to know.
It's a question, John, and I have spoken to some of my friends down in the south of the country, and I've asked them this question, and you, as people listening, will hear, you're from the opposite end of the country. The hardcore, and I mean hardcore, Fianna Fáilers, as they're known in the country, they are not best pleased with party headquarters, with a lot of the elected members, with all the elected members of Fianna Fáil, because they see them, and I would think this is an attitude now that is predominantly a rural thing with Fianna Fáil supporters. They see them at the moment as totally betraying the Fianna Fáil ideology, because they're keeping the old enemy in power. Fianna Fáil grassroots people will tell you that Fianna Fáil's natural place is in power, certainly not keeping Fine Gael there, and should be doing everything to take them out. And I'm just wondering, is what we're seeing in that constituency with the Fianna Fáil candidates, is that the mirror of what we're hearing?
Possibly, Donny. I doubt it somehow, though, because I think at the end of the day, that core Fianna Fáil vote, I mean, they're not going to go anywhere else. There's no doubt they're very annoyed, as you say, that real hardcore Fianna Fáil, the idea that they would keep Fine Gael in government, I mean, that would be anathema to them. But I think probably they're I think probably the issues here are more about maybe about the profile of the candidates, you know, in terms of big names. I think Brendan Smith, you know, he's a TD, former Minister for Agriculture, but that agriculture vote, that farming vote, is going to get squeezed. It's get squeezed a lot of ways, you know. Raid McGuinness will get a lot of it. Luke Ming Flanagan will get a piece of it. So I think it's probably more that, I would think, not getting the campaign organised probably as quickly as they would, losing that momentum, changing your strategy. I think that's more likely to be the case than some, you know, internal backlash because of what's happening at a national level. I expect that's really the
so issue. The big one there is to watch where that fourth seat goes. That's where the scrap is going to be there.
I think it started out as a constituency, Donny, that probably looked pretty routine. I think it's the one really that seems to have thrown up very interesting things. As I said, the Maria Walsh, Mairead McGuinness spat, you know, having the Fianna Fáil issue, Peter Casey. I think, you know, you're starting to see this could be really interesting, but it's likely those first three, the sitting MEPs, will come in, and then it's really three-way fight. A lot of it will come down to transfers. You know, people will ask about the Sinn Féin vote kind of levelling out a little bit. Where do those Marion Harkin votes go to? In 2014, if I remember rightly, when Jim Higgins' Mayo Fianna Gael was eliminated, Marion did very well in terms of those transfers. Does that mean anything at all this time? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
Right, we'll stay rural, so, John, and we'll go to Ireland South. I think the big surprise here for me, and you can do your roundup of it in a second, Mick Wallace. That's a surprise. Didn't see that one coming.
No, possibly not. Interestingly, last night, as you talked about the debate we had here last night, I think, first of all, it was congratulations to Declan Ralph. I think it was very well managed. I think there were six very interesting candidates. Somebody asked Claire Daly why she chose to go to Europe or try to go to Europe, and she made the point that she felt that so much of what's impacting on the Dáil emerges from Europe, and a lot of the time you end up having little time at the end when it comes at a national level to influence legislation that's coming at you. Very much, she is saying, you know, Europe is where a lot of this starts, and that's where the influence lies, and he may feel the same, but you're right, it's probably a lot of people didn't see it coming. Again, it'll make that, again, Mick is a colourful character. It will make this a very interesting election. Again, I think, similar to Midlands North West, I think this will come down to the last seat, and I think he'll obviously be in the shake-up for that. The interesting thing, of course, about Ireland South and Dublin is that each of them now will get an extra seat from 2014, what's called the Brexit bonus seat. So it will be that last seat that he will probably be in contention for will go into cold storage, as in that seat won't become available until Britain leaves the EU.
Right, John. So in racing parlance, give us the runners and riders.
Yeah, so again, just very briefly for the listeners to give background, 2014, the poll was headed by Brian Crowley of Fianna Fáil, a huge 27.4% first preference.
John, was he Fianna Fáil again the last year?
Because he was. Well, I think probably where a little bit of uncertainty comes in is that he was part of the Fianna Fáil aligned grouping of the Alliance of Liberals and Democrats for Europe, and he moved midstream while he was there to a more Eurosceptic, while they call themselves a Eurorealist group. It was the group that the British Conservatives are in. That would have caused some concern. But no, he was a Fianna Fáil MEP. He would have had a big Fianna Fáil vote, as exists in Munster, but it was a big personal vote, to be honest, there as well. Leonie Riada, 19.1%, was elected, as was Sean Kelly of Fine Gael and Deirdre Clun of Fine Gael. So there were the four seats as they were, Donny, at the time. The main candidates this time, Billy Kelleher, TD, Cork North Central. He would, big Fianna Fáil vote, and he's got a high profile. He will, certainly the feeling is that he will be very strong favourite to be elected and possibly first to be elected.
And again, he had to fight his corner with Fianna Fáil HQ to get on the ticket.
Exactly. So maybe that will help too in, you know, on the ground. So, but clearly what seems to be coming through, Donny, is that he's polling extremely strongly and looks a shoe-in, I think, as they would say, for that seat. As I said, Leon Urieda of Sinn Féin, Sean Kelly and Deirdre Clune, they're three sitting MEPs and they're likely to follow him in. That makes four, and then you have the last one. So Mick Wallace, you know, big profile, Wexford-based independent, big name recognition. Of course, people will know him very well in terms of his profile around Garda whistleblowing at the time. And then you have Malcolm Byrne, who's a Wexford Fianna Fáil councillor. So, you know, they look like the two candidates who will go head-to-head for that last seat, both in Wexford. That will be interesting. So you would have to look at Billy Kelleher's transfers. You know, many of them likely to come. They will certainly try to manage them to come to Malcolm Byrne. Will that be enough to make up the gap to what's likely to be a bigger first preference vote for Mick Wallace? It's interesting. I can't really call that one. Mick Wallace probably looks at a touch more the favourite, but it's a tight one, and I think that could go either way. A lot of that will be about, as I said, transfers and vote management. So it looks like Kelleher, Kelly, Clune, Nereida, and then where it's a Wallace versus Byrne Wexford face off.
Very, very interesting. Yeah, I would think you're right. I mean, I've seen some of the polls there recently, and I really had to question who was commissioning them. You know, I mean, some of the figures were just ridiculous. They were bare no resemblance to what you were saying there. And what you were saying is what I'm hearing from everybody. I mean, you're calling it pretty much as it is. And I just think the Mick Wallace factor is going to be interesting.
It is going to be interesting, no doubt.
You know, I mean, Wexford, model county, lovely place, but, you know, even if he got every first preference in Wexford, it won't be enough to get him over the line because of the size of the constituency, and he's not going to get that. But as you say, big name recognition, it depends, again, you know, where is he going to get his votes from? I would think that maybe, then again, I don't know. I mean, as he moves closer to Dublin, do you think his vote is going to fall off, or will it pick up?
I think, to be fair, it's, you know, there's a big national profile there. I think there's no way of getting around that, and I think he probably has an attractiveness to voters. The thing about national profile is that means, you know, increased numbers of people are aware of you, either will like you or don't like you. But I think that's got to help him in a big way, Donny, to be honest, I think, and that will probably keep him as a favourite. We just don't know. It'll be tight at the end, but I think, you know, he does have a national profile, and that always helps. As I said, to come back to what I said earlier, name recognition is a big thing in European elections, and I think that can't but help Mick Wallace.
The constituencies up for decision on next Friday's EU election. Now, we are going to concentrate on the EU election, and we will have one quick chat at the end of it in relation to the local elections, but we will keep it brief. And my guest is Niarra FM's newest member of team, our political analyst, John Morgan. We come to Dublin, John.
Yes, Tony, Dublin. 19 candidates this time around. Again, I mentioned earlier, this is another constituency benefiting from the Brexit bonus. Anybody who's old enough to remember the Brucey bonus, but it's something similar. So we traditionally had three seats. Here in the constituency, it's going to four. It's interesting, by the way, actually, how that works and how it will work, and we can talk about that later if we have time, Donny. Again, very briefly for the listeners, 2014, of course, Lynn Boylan topped the poll for Sinn Féin, elected on the third count. She is the only MEP who is returning for election this time. So that in itself makes things interesting. Brian Hayes isn't running. Nessa Childers isn't running. Nessa Childers was elected the last time with a 10.2% first preference. And Brian Hayes of Fine Gael elected with a 15.5% first preference vote. Interestingly, the next candidates came after them were Eamon Ryan of the Greens at 12.5% and Mary Fitzpatrick Fianna Fáil at 12.6%. Interesting, because of course Nessa Childers was elected with 10.2% only. So again, it shows about the attractiveness in terms of transfers. But the main candidates, only this time, there's some big hitters in there now. Francis Fitzgerald, former minister and Taoiseach, again is tipped to do extremely well and looks very, very likely, if not guaranteed, to be elected. Barry Andrews of Fianna Fáil is running, former TD, Minister of State for Children. Since he left the Dáil, he has been the CEO of the Goal Charity and is now with the Institute of International and European Affairs. Again, for those two, I come back to the name recognition piece.
Can I just stop you there, John? And this is what I was alluding to earlier on when I mentioned about the polls. I struggle, and maybe you will explain it to me with your superior knowledge on this, how Frances Fitzgerald could be... I mean, it's hers to lose if you listen to the polls. And yet she's a first-time candidate. Lynn Boylan, who... I think people will, irrespective of your political persuasion, will say has performed well in Europe. How she can be behind Frances Fitzgerald when Frances Fitzgerald doesn't have a European profile and, you know, to a certain extent, I'd wonder about the validity of that particular poll.
I think there's a couple of things about that, Donny. I think if you remember last night at our debate, one of the things that the candidates talked about is the difficulty of getting profile for European matters. So Lynn Boylan and the other MEPs may well have done Trojan work there, but they will struggle, as they said, to get a bit of coverage on media. So people, a lot of people may not be aware, unfortunately, of what is being done. The strange flip side of that, of course, as you rightly said, Frances Fitzgerald, first-time EU candidate. But, you know, first-time candidate is not a kind of a phrase that in real terms you would associate with Frances Fitzgerald. And I come back to that name recognition piece. She is a former minister. She is a former Taoiseach. You know, she is running for the government party, which is doing very well in the polls. And all of that transfers, all of the things we just said, will transfer to her, I believe, doing extremely well in Dublin. It is... as you say, hers to lose, and I think certainly she will do very well. Equally, Barry Andrews, you know, again, in terms of a Fianna Fáil pedigree, for those people who are mindful to vote Fianna Fáil in Dublin, he's very likely to do very well. There is an amount. I know Fianna Fáil have struggled in Dáil elections in Dublin in certain extents, but I think, again, name recognition on its own will work very well for him. Lynn Boylan, as you said, again, high-profile MEP for Sinn Féin, the only sitting MEP standing, topped the poll the last time, I would imagine will do very well and be elected this time again. You know, she will have got some profile nationally. You'll have seen some of the stories that have been run in terms of issues in Catalonia and northern Spain, and very much she was high profile in terms of campaigning for the release of Catalan politicians who are in prison and undergoing trial at the moment. So I think all of those things will play for very well for her. So that's those three, and then you're into, I think that last seat is very much now, I would imagine, going to be between Claire Daly, Independence for Change, probably marginally ahead at the moment of Kieran Cuff, former Green Party TD and Minister of State. You know, Claire Daly, again, very high profile. Kieran Cuff. Now, the Green agenda, you know, we talked about the Dáil declaration of a climate emergency, you know, and you would ask whether that will play very well for the Green Party. But to some extent, the environment and the climate change agenda has been cannibalised, I think, among all parties. So, you know, how is that going to play? Again, you know, transfers again is a big thing. Some candidates are more transfer friendly than others, but I would expect that Fitzgerald, Andrews and Boylan to be elected. And I think then you come to, again, it's like the other two constituencies, it's either a three-way or in this case a two-way face-off between Claire Daly and Kieran Cuff for the last seat. I think Claire Daly is marginally ahead, but who knows? Again, it's impossible to predict that.
You know? Yeah, well, a week is a long time in politics, John. Now, let us talk about the subs, because this is going to be interesting. And, of course, all revolves around and hinges on the dreaded B word.
Brexit. Yeah, so essentially...
That's before we go into it. Explain what the process is. They'll be elected, but they won't take their seats. So go into that for us.
Yeah, so effectively, the last two politicians to be elected, only to the European Parliament, the phrase people are using is they will go into cold storage. And what that means is that they will not take up their seats until such a time as Britain actually leaves the EU. Now, the Minister for State for Local Government, John Paul Phelan, has spoken about this. If a TD or senator is one of those two last Irish MEPs, they have amended the prohibition on the dual mandate. So people will know that you're not allowed to double job, effectively. You can't be a TD and an MEP. But until such a time as you, being that last elected MEP in either Dublin or Ireland South, goes to Europe, that you will be allowed to continue as a senator or a TD if you are. As he says as well, they cannot designate for people who are privately employed, so obviously that doesn't apply. What makes this interesting, Donny, is that our electoral laws are different here, insofar as in Ireland MEPs are designated to be elected once the counting of votes is complete. In other countries, you are not designated as elected until the first sitting of the EU Parliament. Okay, so what does that mean for us? Well, it means that it'll be interesting to see if there is a protracted amount of time before Britain leaves the EU. What will those two candidates do in terms of pushing for some of the benefits that come with being elected? Because legally they are elected. So will they push for funding for offices? You know, as they will see it, to look after their constituency? Will they look for funding for assistance and so on? How will that go? We just genuinely don't know. So
are they on the payroll once they're elected, once they're deemed elected, whether or not they manage to take their seat in Europe?
I can't give you a definitive answer on that, Tony, but I expect that they're not. I expect they're not on the payroll from the EU. Now I'd have to check that, but my sense is they're not. And there's certainly confusion as to in that interim period, because they're in cold storage, they can't take up their seat until such a time, so I expect that they won't be. But I think that will give itself very much to what I've said. Will they then look to the government here to assist them? They will say, look, we're sitting here 6 months, 8 months, 10 months later, and you know, we have constituents to look after and we need to sort this out. So again, I'm just surmising, but I expect that, you know, that could rankle and we may see those two candidates looking to see how they can be facilitated. That's what I would imagine. I mean, how these two seats, by the way, came up, Donny, is that at the moment the UK has 73 MEPs. It has been agreed in Europe that when Brexit is complete, 46 of those 73 will in themselves be held in cold storage for potential future enlargement of the EU, which means that the EU are looking at other countries joining in the future. Serbia are looking to join, for example, other countries, and they're going to hold back the 46 of those 73 for MEPs coming from those countries that they expect to see acceding to the EU over time. Then the remaining 27 will be redistributed among 14 countries. So Ireland is one of those. Ireland has 11 MEPs at the moment and it gets an extra two. So that's effectively how this is all working.
Confucius once said, may you live in interesting times.
Except that was a curse. That was not meant to be a compliment.
We certainly are living in interesting times, John, aren't we?
Yeah.
I suppose before we leave that whole EU election thing, another thing which I find surprising, all the polls are saying that Nigel Farage and his Brexit party are absolutely going to romp home in England. Now, to me, it's a total anathema, like that you're so anti-Europe, you're the one that led the charge to get Britain out of Europe, and here you are heading the polls to put MEPs back into Europe. Now, I appreciate, obviously, John, that it's probably going to be in his usual disruptive role as opposed to constructive. If you take those polls, and again, I was a critic of them earlier in relation to our EU polling at the moment, but if you take those polls in Britain as being correct, it doesn't bode well for a second referendum if there was to be one on Brexit, does it?
No, I think what we're seeing in Britain at the moment, Donny, is that there's a real polarisation going on. If you look at the three options that people are being given, if you're looking at a second referendum, the government's withdrawal agreement, or no deal, it's the one in the middle that's suffering. And people are going one way or the other, and it is becoming polarised. And that, on that side of people who favour no deal, I think that's where that Brexit party is getting, and there's going to be a huge protest vote. A lot of Conservatives are going to go that way. Labour Leave people will go that way as well. As you say, the issues you would think technically that Nigel Farage has are things that need to be settled at Westminster, not in the European Parliament. But I'm just wondering, in this very much personal view, I'm just wondering whether he's gone beyond his stated aim of getting UK out of the EU, which is on the way, and whether he's going into consultancy mode, whether he is effectively encouraging other Eurosceptic or far-right parties to agitate to get their own countries out, and whether he will use his time, limited and all as it may be, in the Parliament to try to stir up some negativity towards the EU generally. That's possibly where we're going. Somebody mentioned, or a number of people mentioned, again, going back to the debate last night, Donny, about the future makeup of the Parliament. So after next Friday, and the votes are cast and the votes are counted, and we move forward to a new EU Parliament, it could look very different. So the two big parties, the two big European groupings, of course, are the European People's Party, which Fine Gael are a member of, and the Socialist grouping, which Labour would be aligned to, although it doesn't have any MEPs in 2014, which is the first time ever Nessa Childers is in that group. But between them, since I think around 1999, they will have had the majority of seats between them. They're not. It was even a European Parliament poll of its own which says that they won't have a majority for the first time in a long time. It'll be probably around 45% of the vote. So you're looking at other groupings. You're looking at ALDE, which is the grouping that Fianna Fáil are aligned to, and the one that the French President Macron's En Marche group will be likely aligned to. But you're also looking at other groupings, as I said, Eurosceptic / Eurorealist and far-right groups. Far-right groups where, you know, which house parties like the Northern League, which is the Italian Vice President Matteo Salvini's group. So again, the feeling there is that they are going to go into the European Parliament to disrupt it, certainly around budget negotiations, where they're going to get stuck in, I guess, as it were. Certainly from a British perspective, Nigel Farage will talk about or certainly indicate that they will go in to look to disrupt and be very difficult if, as they see it, the European Commission doesn't facilitate their withdrawal. So I think there's great challenges to anybody going over there as an MEP. Going over there, you have to say, you know, you believe in the forum you're going to, and there needs to be work done to protect the workings of the European Parliament, because certainly there will be greater numbers of what would be referred to as populist MEPs going over there to make the workings of the Parliament quite difficult. So it will be an interesting thing to look at.
It certainly will, but I mean, it's just it smacks to me of hypocrisy, you know, wanting to get back on the gravy train that you're trying to derail, more or less, you know. John, that is everything I think that we can discuss in relation to Europe. I agreed when we came in that we would deal solely with Europe, but I just want to ask you one question in relation to the local elections. And anybody who's anybody will tell you that from local election results, you cannot really extrapolate national politics. You cannot correlate the two, because local elections really are about the local man or the local woman, as you said earlier on, like filling potholes. But, and this is the but, If you take health, housing, the children's hospital, and now broadband, do you think that Fine Gael are going to get a kicking next week? And if they are, who's going to benefit?
I think certainly about the nature of local elections, Donny, is that, you know, they tend to be often about protest votes. And you're right about not extrapolating across to national elections, but traditionally that's what local elections have been about. I mean, they are about local candidates, but they are very much about sending a message to a government, things that people are annoyed about. And there's no doubt, I mean, the Children's Hospital will be something sticking in people's craw in terms of price, and also broadband. I think at a rural level, I think people just will be relieved that it's coming. One of the candidates last night talked about the ESB looking at having, a number of years ago, providing rural broadband cheaper and more in a shorter period of time. Obviously, there'll be evidence to contradict that. You know, certainly I think the government come at it from a different angle. People in rural areas, I think, will be relatively happy with broadband and kind of will leave the price to one side, I think, in a way. But certainly there's plenty of things that people will be annoyed about. And traditionally, government parties do get a, as the word used, as a, do get a kicking.
It's almost like the midterms in America,
it
isn't
is,
it?
Yeah. It is. It is. Now, that second part of your question, though, Donny, is the crucial one. Where do they go? You know, again, the rise of the independents. I mean, there will be a lot of independent candidates who will likely, at different local levels, will likely do well. So those votes will be fractured. Will Sinn Féin pick up some more? Again, people are talking about the vote plateauing. I don't know. You know, the Social Democrats and so on. It very much would come down to constituency by constituency as to where they would go. I expect, you know, difficult. Will Labour pick up? You know, coming from very low base, possibly. But again, I don't see a major push up for them. I think it'll be very much about the different constituencies. But we probably can expect to see independent candidates, maybe on single issues, doing very well. Going back to where I'm originally from, certainly you will have certain towns who will say, we have voted for parties, but the party candidates are not from here, and so therefore they will tend to look after their own electoral area, district or town. And you're seeing people now say, no, hang on a second, you know, we've traditionally voted against along certain lines, and they feel very much let down by those parties. So they will tend to, rather than pick another party, they will tend to go with an independent candidate who is standing on, I am from town X, and it'll be about looking after town X. And that seems to be the way of it again.
Well, John, it will all unfold live here on Saturday, the 25th of May. The ballot boxes will be open on that morning. Our live transmission on the election day, or the election count special, should I say, commences at 12:30 p.m. And I'm delighted to say that my colleague, as he is now, political analyst John Morgan, will be making a part of that panel at some stage during the day. John, you're very welcome on board, and thank you so much for your contribution this morning, because I think, you know, a lot of people could have been felt like they were in a blizzard with the way some media outlets were presenting and previewing these elections. But I think you did an absolutely excellent job this morning, and thank you so much for that, John.
Thank you, Donny.
Now then, that was Nira Finn's political analyst, and as I said, newest member of the team, John Morgan there, previewing what could be a very, very interesting EU election. I would venture to say maybe a lot more interesting this time round than in previous ones.